This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. If this is your first time listening, we've been doing this for 6.5 years. We're into about our 225th or so podcast. I have to look it up to see exactly how many there are. And I'm doing something really special with our next two podcasts. I have a little mini-series. I don't know if my mini-series will get nominated for an Emmy or an Oscar, but we're doing a mini-series on dental office design and construction. And I am so fortunate to have met two brothers, Joseph Panisi and his brother Mike Panisi. Joe is a dental architect. We call him a unicorn. Not too many people specialize in this. And on this podcast, I'm going to be talking to Joe about all things designing a dental office. Now, not only is this a family affair between Joe and his brother Mike, but Joe actually also works with his wife Lauren, who is an amazing interior designer. So we're going to talk about all things design. So this podcast, which will come out in late August, we'll talk about what do you need to think about when you're designing interior design, the architectural design, the ideas and all this stuff. And then the podcast with Mike is going to be talking about once Joe designs the office, now we got to build it. So first we design it, then we build it. I can't change a light bulb, but even I know that. So we'll get to Joe Panisi in a moment. I want to thank our wonderful marketing partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, 140 continuing education courses in one place for one very reasonable price. Go to www.decisionsindentistry.com, their magazine. If you don't get it, you should, because they have the best clinical content in dentistry. I also want to let you know that we would love to see you sign up, have you sign up for our new tax law seminar. Now, you may or may not have heard, I'm sure you have, that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or we call it OBBA, O-B-B-B-A, that is the legal name of the bill, H.R. 1, was signed by President Trump on July 4th and has numerous tax provisions that are going to affect dentists. A lot of them are going to help you. So my partner here at Ide Bailey, I'm a dental division director. My partner, Don Watson, and I are going to go ahead and do a webinar for the Orange County, Harbor, and San Gabriel Valley Dental Societies. It's going to be also on the events page at the California Dental Association. So watch for that. For my California dentists and for my non-California dentists, go on to the CDA's webpage and take a look at that, or just shoot me an email at awiederman, A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at idebailey.com, or call me at 657-279-3243. Tell me that you want to be registered for the webinar. It's going to be September 4th from 6 till 8 p.m. That's September 4th, 6 to 8 p.m. There are no CE credits for it, and it is a free webinar, and we're going to talk to you all about the new tax law. So we'd love to see you on there. We think this thing's going to sell out. And if it does, we'll rinse, lather, and repeat, and we'll do it again. We're also going to be doing our Business of Dentistry webinar series. We have some clinical here. We have some wellness stuff going on. And on November 12th, we're going to have Don Watson and I are going to do our year-end tax planning webinar series. Those are going to be September 17th and November 12th. And again, if you guys did not have a great experience for tax season and you owed a lot of money and you didn't get really good service from your CPA, Ide Bailey is here for you. We work with approximately 1,000 dentists in all of our offices. We work with a couple of hundred in our office in Tustin, California. Again, please give me a call if you are looking for a new CPA who knows the difference between medial and distal. And I studied that a lot, and I think I understand that now. 657-279-3243 or aweederman@idebailey.com.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right. I want to introduce my friend and my guest, Joseph Panisi. We'll call him Joe. Joe is what we call, as I mentioned earlier, a unicorn in his field. He possesses a rare blend of expertise in both architectural and the dental industry. Joe's been a licensed architect for over 30 years, has a key eye for design, spatial planning, and aesthetic considerations. Those are big words for me. Joe needs to reduce the number of syllables in his website. While working in that now, Joe has got a great background he'll tell you about. For 20 years, he worked for Patterson Dental and Benco Dental as an equipment specialist. So he knows dental, and he's an amazing architect. So he's my guy for this conversation. Gained expertise and knowledge and possesses a deep understanding of the technical requirements, ergonomics, and specialized infrastructure needed for dental practices. Joseph Panisi, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Too many big words, man.
My wife and I wrote that, and AI wasn't a big thing yet. I think we need to put it in there and tone it down a little bit. I agree with you.
Yeah, what you do is you put in the put a section for like normal people, and then a section for Art Wiederman. Here's words that have one syllable or less. So I know I had mentioned, and we've talked that you were with Patterson and Benco. So yes. Tell us a little bit about your professional journey.
Well, sure. Yes. So let me. I guess I'll start right at the very beginning. So
it's always a great place to start.
Yeah. So my dad's a dentist. He's retired.
Right.
And that explains why I'm in this industry. And I know you're going to talk to my brother later on, and he'll be on a podcast, and why we both got connected and hooked into the dental industry was through our dad and connections from him. I studied architecture at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and graduated in 1990. And immediately upon graduation, within about a year and a half, my dad needed to remodel his office. That was my first dental office, was my dad's. From there, and he worked with Patterson at the time, from there gained a close relationship with the Patterson equipment specialist that he worked with. And the equipment specialist said, "Hey, would you like to design some more dental offices?" And I said, "Okay, sure, why not?" And so we did, quite a few in a number of years there. I had been working for a firm as an architect, not in dental, just doing other things in the early 90s, and transitioned out to be working for myself because dental offices started to take off in the about 93, 94, 95 at time. And so I worked for myself for a few years, and then Patterson came and knocked on my door and said, "Hey, the guy that you've been working with is retiring and he thinks you should take his job." And I said, "What does he do?" I don't know how to sell. And so anyway, back in the day then, the equipment specialist actually, either on CAD or on a drawing board, would design the space for the doctor, for the dentist. So it was a good fit back then for me, because I had a leg up on design, and honestly, learning the equipment side wasn't that challenging for me because it kind of went hand in hand. So I learned that, picked it up, and was an equipment specialist, stopped doing architecture full time, was an equipment specialist from 96 till about 2017, actually. 2019, I guess, was when I finally hung it up. And in that time period, was with both Benco and Patterson at different times. So I do have a bit of experience. I understand the technology, the equipment, and the differences between a pediatric dentist, an orthodontist, a prosthodontist, you know, et cetera, et cetera, oral surgeon. So,
well, and you know, specifically, which I've talked to other architects and contractors, well, where do the lines go to connect the CBCT machine? Where's the, you know, the whole equipment side, because you did it for 20 plus years.
I did it for 20 plus years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get started with our conversation, Joe. Okay. Dennis calls you up and says, I have a vision. I have a dream. I want to build my dream dental office. So your first conversation, talk to a dentist for the first time. What are the things that you ask that dentist? At the beginning of the process, where do we start?
It's great question. Get that a lot. So there's quite a few factors, as you can imagine, that are the dentist needs to consider. One of which obviously pertains to you specifically, the money, and how do I, you know, keep my money and make it work for me, et cetera. And so some of the questions I start with are, you know, are you leasing your space? Are you buying a building? Are you buying a condo? What are the parameters that you're getting into here? Because from certain mindset of the dentist is, hey, if I'm going to rent a space and I may be moving in 10 years, I don't know if I want to go hog wild and build my dream office today. I want to build something I'm really proud of that works for me, that I'm sufficient. And I know that probably I'm going to move on, buy a building, buy a condo or what have you, then I'm going to do my dream office. So we need to get on the same page, and I need to understand their, you know, both short-term and long-term goals in this practice. But let's assume that this is the practice they're going to retire in, so to speak, and this is going to be their dream practice. Then we'll talk about, well, what's your budget? You know, the sort of the nuts and bolts of that. Of the process, but really, what is the vision? What is your short-term goal? If you're a younger dentist, maybe this is your first office, and you know, you've got aspirations of bringing on a few associates and maybe expanding into other disciplines that you might either bring on an oral surgeon once or twice a week and an endodontist, or you're going to perform those services. That may shape the design. And how do we phase that? Is it something we're going to build out, you know, all these extra spaces all at once? Are we going to master plan and design the end result and then scale it back for the now with room to grow later on? Or are you leasing a space that you might be able to buy down the road and maybe buy the space next door? And so is that your expansion? So there's a lot of factors, a lot of information that I will ask up front just to get a better understanding of where they are, where they want to be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the road, and how we can help them get there.
So, and I asked your brother this because I actually recorded your brother's podcast before I recorded yours. It's going to come out afterwards. It just was when you guys were available. Let's talk about the order and the people that are involved.
Sure.
Who are the people you work with? A dentist is saying, I want to do a startup. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, do we call the bank? Do we call your brother? Do we call you? Do we call, you know, who do we call first? And what's the order of how do you like to do this? And maybe how do you like to be involved in the beginning? Are you going to go look at the space? Because we also have to bring in a leasing agent to find the space, right? So who are we talking to?
Great question. So I love to be involved early in the process. The earlier, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I do go out and look at spaces, as my brother does as well, with prospective clients and help them understand if the spaces they're considering are going to be conducive to the design to a design that will be really part of their vision, that will, we can get the best out of that space. Some spaces are odd shaped and they don't work out very well, and some are much more easy to work with. Location, parking, there's a lot of factors. So I love to be involved early, but realistically, I'm usually not. Normally, they're going to talk to the bank, see how much I can borrow. They're going to talk to a realtor and help them find spaces. And we've got, my brother and I both have connections here that are in both those industries to really help the dentist, you know, find the right location, get the right amount of funding, and so forth and so on.
So you had meant you brought some of this up about choosing a space. So if you had, in a perfect world, the dentist would come to you and say, "Hey, Joe, pick me the ideal type of space." What would be the ideal space? Because doctors, if you're going to go out there and look at different buildings, now it's not like there's going to be hundreds of buildings in the town that you want to practice in. You might be subject to maybe just one or two or three. What would be some of the parameters of a space in a building that doctors should, that's attractive to you to design, that gives you the best chance for success?
So there are, again, quite a few factors that I would ask the doctor, you know, as an example, if they are an established practice that is moving, they don't, they've got patients. They're not, I mean, they're going to grow anyway, just by, you know, by being there and having patients and word of mouth, but they're not in the super growth mode like a startup would be. So where do you want to be? Do you want to be in a professional building with other dentists and doctors, which really, again, more of an established practice typically would take that route? Are you a startup and you want to be, have high visibility and foot traffic? Are you going to be a storefront near a Starbucks or something like that? And so I would talk through the both scenarios with them and see what really makes the most sense. No, quite often they've kind of come to that conclusion either by talking to the realtor or the banker. And again, like me, there are people that have specialty in dealing with dentists for realty and for financing. So those people can help. But I would ask them, you know, and once they make that determination, what's important to you? Do you like, you want windows? I mean, who wants to sit in a closed room and not look out a window? So if you've got a strip mall that you've got windows at the front, maybe a couple windows in the back, and your treatment rooms are going to be along the side where there's no windows, there's plenty of offices that I and others have designed that fit that mold. But is that really where you want to be?
You've designed over 500 dental offices.
I've lost count. I used to keep a list 15, 20 years ago. I had a list that was pages and pages long, and I stopped. Yes, it's got to be well over that. You know, if it was me and if I was an established dentist and I had patients, I would want to be in a location that I was really, I look forward to going to every day. And I want to look out windows and I want to have a view if I could, and those sorts of things. And so those are fun for me but you know, we could make probably just about any space work. But
okay,
some will be better than others based on, again, the size, the shape, and really the parameters of what they want to do. Do they want, you know, 10 treatment rooms and they're going to have an associate on one side and they're going to be on the other? Are they going to have a hygiene bay and then associate and the doctor? So there's really three zones that are in action. And so what does that look like? Are we going to do more of a circular? So those questions really help me to help them find a shape or a size of a space that's conducive to their design.
So vision. I know that I like to have a separate financial arrangements room where we can go in if we're going to talk about a $50,000 case.
Yep.
We like bigger, not smaller opera. How big should an operatory be?
Great question. Depends on what the function really is going to be. So just your
general dentistry, general traditional dentist. Chairs, unit,
sure. For four-handed, so you've got a doctor and assistant, four-handed dentistry. It's not a hygiene room. It's not a surgical suite or big implant case room or something like that. Your standard operatory is going to be about 11 and a half to 12 and a half feet long by about 9 to 11 feet wide. Yep. And the variations depend on, do you want sinks at the side or the rear? Or do you want single entry, dual entry? Do you want a closed door? You know, there's a lot of code issues that come into play that I have to sort through to make the treatment rooms accessible, which is unfortunately a California code that we have to deal with all the time.
Okay.
And then bigger rooms for surgical or something like that, they would be bigger. If it's an oral surgery room, it's going to be maybe 15 by 15 or 15 by 18 so that they can get, you know, crash carts and anesthesia around the treatment room, around the chair.
Okay. Now, as I mentioned earlier, your wife, Lauren, right?
Lauren, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lauren is an interior designer. So how do you and the interior designer, they hire you, you're the guy. How do you and Lauren work together? What is the input? I'm sure dinner table conversation is very interesting at your house, given that
it's
all dental. How does the interior designer work with the architect?
So the way that we've worked together, and let me preface this by saying we are a team. We are 50-50 partners in our business in Pep Creative, but we also do projects independently. So I've worked with other interior designers on dental offices. She's actually worked with other architects as the interior designer. We certainly prefer and love to work together, but there's many ways that we can work together. But what we tend to do is, if the project starts off where they're hiring us to do full architecture and interior design, we from the start of the design on the computer all the way through first presentation, she and I will be, you know, consulting each other, talking about, you know, what do you think about this? We're bouncing ideas off of each other on the layout and the design, and taking into consideration all of the aesthetic aspects, architectural aspects, and features that the dentist would like it to have in the practice. I usually take more of the upfront lead on the design, because most of the time dentists are in a hurry. Especially if they got a lease, they've got a certain amount of time to get permits and get construction done where their free rent is, you know, gonna run out. So they want to get in as quickly as possible. To streamline that process, I usually do more of the heavy lifting in the front end so that we can get the overall design and plan really solidified, laying the framework or the groundwork for her to then have places for accent walls and logo walls and, you know, whatever other amenities and aesthetic features we want to have put into the facility. I'll sort of lay the groundwork and create backdrops, if you will, or areas for her to come in and then work more closely on what does that look like? And is it wallpaper? Is it tile? Is it wood? Is it whatever? And so it's a back and forth. And like I said, quite often in the way we run it, I'll sort of take the first, you know, two thirds really gung ho. And then in the end, I'm sort of managing overall, making sure that construction's going correctly and following both the architecture and what she has created on the interiors, the finishes side. She comes in really strong about a third of the way in, and really we overlap in the middle quite a bit, and it's quite a bit of back and forth. We had a client in our office today that is an orthodontist who is almost at the end of construction. Actually, it's with my brother Mike as well. Lauren's the interior designer, I'm the architect, and we were talking about tile that, you know, we had to make a change. And so we were just trying to finalize the tile that they need to put in the bathrooms. And so it's a back and forth. And that aspect, the interior design, sometimes goes right up to, towards the end of construction, because there are some decisions that, you know, they have a change of heart on, and they'll make, I don't want the blue tile, I want the green tile or the whatever. And, you know, the one with the pattern. So that was one of these where we had to make a last minute change. But we work very closely.
So let's walk through the mechanics. They hire you, you talk to them, you get their vision, you see the space, because obviously you got to see the space to design the space.
Yes.
Do you do an initial drawing, have the client approve it, then you do revision? How does that all work?
Yes. So there are multiple ways that a project gets kicked off. Sometimes the dentist will be working with a dental dealer, a Schein, Patterson, Benco, Burkhart, sure. whoever.
Sure.
They'll work with a dealer, and the dealer will oftentimes do what's called a fit plan for them. They've got a space, and they'll do a complimentary fit plan. And I've seen some that are great. I mean, I used to do them, of course, and when I was there, and I would take ownership of it, and I would actually myself, because of my background, I would sketch something out, say, tell our design team, this is what I want you to do, just like as if they were my employees in my office. And so that's the approach I took. Most of the dental dealers out there don't have my background. And so you're just taking this rectangle or whatever the space is, sending it off and getting something that works. Oftentimes I get that I say to the dentist, okay, you've got a fit plan. Do you like it? Do you love it? Like, tell me about it. And they say, it works. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes they say, I don't really like it, but it works. And my job at that point is to say, well, listen, you've hired me to really capture your vision. Let me massage this. Let me work on this and change it to something that I think is going to better fit your vision and what you've told me. And oftentimes sometimes it's a radical 180 and it's a complete shift because I've got some ideas that really weren't explored. And sometimes the plan that they had, they're really happy with, and it's minor tweaks and we move forward. That's if they have the dental dealer to start with. If they've hired me and they don't have a fit plan, then yes, what we do is we'll go ahead and get started with the design. We call it the fit plan. It's really showing them what our initial thoughts are on what we heard them say that they want out of the space, the types of rooms, the numbers of rooms, the sizes, the locations, et cetera, et cetera. So we're putting all those pieces together and coming up with something that works for them. And I don't give them something that doesn't work well. Like I need to feel comfortable with what I'm doing before I present it to them. And sometimes, you know, the design process isn't perfect. It takes a little while. It could take a week, 2 weeks to really keep tweaking and getting it so that we're comfortable presenting something to them. That's the starting point.
At the end of the day, you know, we pretty much got one shot at this. I mean, you can't just design the office, build the office, then go, okay, I moved in. I want to tear it all up and start over again. We can't do that. We can't do that. So, all right, now let's talk about, you've talked about how you work with the interior designer. Let's talk about how you work with the contractor. I'm assuming you guys are hand in hand. I know that when I did the podcast recording with Mike, which everybody will hear after this one, he was all talking about making sure that the office has efficient, like the building has sufficient electricity and all this stuff. So are you interacting with the contractor as you're designing the office and saying, hey, this is my design. Can you build this? Because if he can't build it or she can't build it, it's not going to happen, right?
Yes, great question. So when I can, I often go out to prospective job sites. If Mike's there or with or without him or whatever, whoever the contractor is, not just my brother, we do work independently of each other. So, but yes, if I can get out there early and get a good look at it before they've even signed the lease, I can give that feedback. I think you talked about that a little bit before. Mike and contractors are looking for, you know, sort of the infrastructure, the systems, the electrical, the HVAC. Where's the plumbing? Are we going to have any issues mechanically building this space? Most of the time, they could pretty much build whatever I design, but can the infrastructure support, as an example, a bathroom in the far corner of a building when we're not sure where the sewer depth is? We don't know what the depth is there. And that's where Mike and his team would come in and help. And so we do have those conversations. Mike and I have a project right now here in Alameda that plumbing is a big issue. And he told me early on, he said, we're going to need to really work together on the plumbing to make sure that we can get everything to work, because it's what's called a post-tension slab. It's just a construction term, but you cannot trench the slab. We are stuck with putting plumbing into a certain location, and there's a designated area where the only place we can put plumbing. And so, great example, I got the fit plan. I tweaked it to try and maximize our drainage locations. And I worked with Mike on to make sure that we were going to be okay. And so we went back and forth quite a bit to fine tune it.
And that's why it is so important, doctors, number one, to work with dental specialists who do this all day long. And number two, to make sure that the architect and the contractor are working together. Because if you just get a design and you have a budget of $500,000, $600,000, whatever your number is, and you know, you get a design and then we get into the building, we find out, oh, well, this building doesn't have enough electricity to run the CBTC machine. Or there's a problem with the sewage, like you say. I mean, that's going to blow up a doctor's budget. That's why it's so important before we do anything for you and the contractor to work together. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, it really is. And one of the things that I do, and I do this with my brother, I do this with other contractors. If the doctor signs on with a contractor, in other words, they're in contract with somebody and we're still working on the design. And especially this comes into play, especially where there's a tight budget. You mentioned 500,000. That's great. Sometimes it's 750. Sometimes it's 400. I've got a project right now. The budget's 400,000. Unfortunately, the dentist didn't tell me that before we got too far down the road. And when I found that out, I said, I don't think we can build it for 400,000. Let's take a breath, back up. Let's get some numbers. And sure enough, we were at 550 where he only had 400,000. So that's a good example of now working with the contractor. So I said he was talking to a few. I said, what are some ways, contractors, that you, knowing the building and knowing the intent, how can we give the doctor really what he wants? But how do we scale back the dollars? Like, as an example, if I design something a little differently or move the location in the mechanical room, is that going to save $10,000 because we don't have to redo all the plumbing? And so we will go through that exercise. We call that value engineering. And Mike and I do that quite a bit when we have common projects. We will go and value engineer my design to really try and maximize the budget. And where that comes into play also is towards the end with the materials. The interior designer, Lauren, and others, oftentimes the doctor loves things that happen to be a little bit more expensive. And so when we start getting the tile and the flooring and the wallpaper and whatever material prices, they go, oh my gosh, that's out of my budget. So now it's an exercise of, okay, Mike, what is the budget for flooring? And so we work closely with Mike and other contractors on trying to, you know, pick materials that are within their allotted budget for a certain aspect.
And that's why, again, doctors, I want to be very clear here. You've got really four major players in the building or reconstruction, remodel, whatever it is. You've got the bank, you've got the leasing agent, you've got the architect, Joe and Lauren, interior designer, and you've got the contractor. All right, take a minute now and tell us a little bit about your company, how you work. I know you're licensed in California, but you're able to work all over. Talk a little bit about all of that. And I want you to give out your contact information. And doctors, feel free to give Joe a call. You're thinking about this. Maybe you're 6 months away. Maybe you've talked to the bank. Maybe you're about to sign a lease. Wherever you are in the project, Joe can say, time out. Before you go any further, go to step 3 and 4 and don't do step 5 yet. And that's the advantage of working with dental specialists, which I've worked with for 41 years in this. So tell us a little about your company and what you do, PEP Creative Architecture and Interior Design.
Yep.
And give out your contact information. And folks, I encourage you, if you're thinking about this, to give Joe a call and listen to both this podcast, the next one, because some of the most informative podcasts we've done are these two, by the way.
Wow. So PEP Creative when my wife and I, we were when I was working at in Patterson and as an equipment specialist, she was working independently as interior designer. And when I left and said, you know, our dream, well, back up, our dream when we were in college and when we were having kids was someday we'd love to work together. And that day happened to be about 4 or 5 years ago when finally we created PEP Creative, which PEP is Panisi e Panisi, P-E-P. So it's, you know, Lauren and me, PEP Creative. And that's how the name came about.
We're located in San Rafael, California, which is about 20 minutes north of San Francisco. And we currently do projects all over Northern California. I've got a few that are brewing in Southern California. And as you mentioned, I am licensed in the state of California. So I can handle any project from start to finish in the state of California. Not a problem. We've got projects in Santa Cruz, Monterey, way up north, Auburn, way out in the Central Valley, Fresno, Bakersfield. We got them all over the place. I've worked on projects outside of the state of California, but not being licensed in those states, I can't right now stamp and sign the plans and get them through their local jurisdiction. The project's big enough, I can certainly go ahead and get my license in that state. And I've looked at doing that. There just isn't the call for that right now. But there are plenty of designers and architects that work outside of their state of license as the designer of record. And then what you need is an architect of record in the state you're in to be the responsible one to stamp the plans and run those through the city. So I actually do that for people out of state sometimes. I've got it's not a dental office, believe it or not. It's a bank down in Monterey that I'm the architect of record from a firm out of Arizona. So that's how you handle that.
You can do all the work.
Absolutely.
You just have to have another professional who's licensed in that state.
Correct.
Because you might get an architect who is trying to build a dental office and they don't know all of this. And they might come to you, or they've seen you, they heard this podcast, maybe, who knows? And they say, hey, can you do the design and we work together? That's something you can do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I actually got a call about 8 months ago from somebody here in the Bay Area, another architect who called me and said, you know, I'm an architect. I've got a client who's a dentist and they want me to design their dental office. And I really don't know what to do. And I found you through some other sources and I'd like to work with you on it because I don't know dentistry. And so, yes, that happens, and we can definitely jump in and help. Absolutely.
Okay. I want to hit a bunch of other stuff. Go, sure. No, give out your contact information. Okay. How do they get all of you?
Again, so my email is Joe, J-O-E at pepcreative, P-E-P creative.net. My phone number is 925-339-1101. And again, we are located in San Rafael, California, 925-339-1101.
And doctor, if you're outside of the state of California and you want to work with Joe and Lauren, you know, you can do that. So anyway, all right. So we get a dentist who says, I want the design to look like X and Y. And you look at the dentist, what they want to do, and you go, no, that's not going to work. How do you talk people out of their, because you've worked with dentists for 30 years and I love them to death. I've spent my whole career devoted to the dental profession. And they're the most wonderful humans.
Yep.
But sometimes they're very set in their ways and they want it the way they want it. And have you had to talk people off the ledge on doing some stuff? Talk maybe some examples even.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, first thing I encourage ideas and communication, and you know, really no idea is a bad idea. It's just some ideas are better than others. And when a dentist will come to me and say, I want to do this, and I can visualize it in my mind, or I just know the space isn't going to be conducive to it, or it's just not going to function well or look great or what have you, I will gently show them either by, you know, graphically or some other way that their idea isn't necessarily going to give them the end result they're looking for, and sort of gently guide them in a direction that's more conducive to what I think is the vision they're trying to achieve.
That's good.
Yeah. But some architects have a big ego and it's my way or the highway. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm doing this for you. You know, this is your office. This is your vision. At the end of the day, I want to be proud of the work that we did for you and for you to love it. That's our goal. And it doesn't have to look exactly the way that I think it needs to look. It's the way you want it to look, but we want to be, like I said, proud and happy with the end result.
Right. But doctors remember that if you tell Joe that you want X and Joe says, no, I don't think X is going to work. I want you to do Y and Z. And you say, do X. Joe will do X as long as it's not illegal or fattening. Correct. Then if you're mad at the result after that, don't be coming running to Joe with a hatchet. Wait a minute. You screwed up my dental office, right?
Well, yeah. And you know, the interesting thing is nowadays, you know, everything we do is in 3D. So when we start a project from day one, we call it a model. We are actually building their office as a three-dimensional model in the computer. And so I've had times where your example, and I can't think of a specific example to give you, but where I've taken the 3D model and I've put in the elements the doctor asked for, and we've gotten on a Zoom call and I've put my 3D model on and I've walked them through and I said, is this what you're talking about? And they look at it and go, oh, I hate that. And so I don't even have to be the bad guy. I'm just showing them what they asked for. And they realize that in looking at it on the computer digitally, that it's not going to work. And they say, you know what? Let's go back to what you had before. I think your idea was a little better, whatever. So
Joe, what's the difference between someone like yourself who does this all day long? And there are lots of very, very competent architects out there who design commercial space. But the difference between what you do, what is a dentist going to see if someone has never designed a dental office before? What are those architects? Because I've got to assume that you've had dentists who have come and said, hey, Joe, I had XYZ architecture firm who's never designed dental because he was my brother-in-law's third cousin, four times removed, right?
Yep.
And I something wasn't right. And I want you to do it. What do you see that other architects who are good architects are doing that aren't really what they should be doing that you see in a dental office? I'm a wordy guy. I'm sorry, but that's...
No, it's that's good. I think a lot of it has to do with really knowing what the dentist does, and especially the different disciplines. And I'll give you an example. This goes back probably 12 or 15 years ago. I had a pediatric office in out in Antioch, California, and I was the equipment specialist at the time. I wasn't even the architect, but I take responsibility when I'm on a project, even as the architect. I'm sort of a second set of eyes for the equipment specialist, because if I'm out there and I see, and I know that they want to go with, for example, dental track lights, and I see them putting up backing that doesn't look correct, I'll question it. I'll say, wait a second, doc said he wants this. Is that what you're doing? And so I'm sort of like a backup set of eyes. So a good example, and this is in no fault for this designer, just didn't know. I'm out doing a job walk and they're about to frame the walls. And I'm like, something's wrong here. We're in a two-room, a two-bay pediatric bay. And I'm looking around and I'm getting my tape measure. I'm like, don't frame the walls. Something is wrong. And I'm not the architect now. I'm the equipment specialist.
Right.
And I said, something's off. Just pause for a second.
Stop.
Well, sure enough, the room from head to toe was about 8.5 feet long. Well, a dental chair is 6 feet long and they got a 2-foot counter at the end. So the chair wasn't going to fit. They weren't going to be able to get in the room. And so it was because the person who did the design didn't know the sizes of the chairs and ergonomics. They're about getting around the chair and sitting at 12 o'clock versus 9 o'clock versus 1 o'clock or if you're left-handed, you know, 3 o'clock, 11 o'clock or whatever. And so those are the important things. It's the little nuances that are like buried deep in the back of my brain that I just are in innate for me, really make the process go a bit smoother than someone who doesn't have that experience. And quite honestly, if someone came to me who wanted to build a restaurant, I would say to them, you know what? I really don't have the experience that I'd love to try. Don't get me wrong, but I don't have that kind of experience. I'm going to take a little longer and I'm going to stumble a little more while I figure it out. And if you're okay with that, great. But if you want someone who has done restaurants and really knows what they're doing, I got a buddy over here that, you know, can help you. So
yeah. So I think also it's really good. You need to inspect what you expect doctors. And And so, Joe, I'm assuming that you're absolutely fine with, you probably got references coming out of your ears, mm-hmm. as does your brother, as does your wife, sure. in all the stuff you do. So if a dentist, I mean, I would always encourage, and tell me if you disagree, I don't think you will, is go look at two or three or four offices that Joe Panisi and Mike Panisi have designed. And take a look. What questions should the dentist ask a colleague who's worked with you or somebody else and say, you know, what should they ask about the architect? What should they ask about the contract? What should they be asking other dentists? What are the questions to decide if you're the right guy?
Great. Good question. So I would, one of the probably the most important question is, how did the process go? Were they easy to work with? Did they listen to you? Did the end result check all the boxes for your vision and ergonomics and all the things that you wanted to get out of it? Were there problems on the job? Was there finger pointing? Was there, you know, like how did it go? Were they timely? Were the recommendations they made things that you said yes or no to? And if you did go with, let's say yes, said yes to, that you said, you know what, that was a good decision. I'm glad you made that recommendation. So you just want to ask those questions. And yes, I would definitely say go look at some offices that he or she has done and get a feel for how they were to work with.
All right. I need we are required by law to provide entertainment. What is the strangest request for a dental office design you've ever gotten? I know you got a story. You got to have a story on this, right?
I got a couple stories, actually.
Oh, give me one or two of your best stories.
Okay. Yeah. So this goes back quite a way. I want to say this was probably in the late 90s.
And don't say what city it's in. One time, Joe, I was lecturing at a dental convention in the East Coast, and I started telling a story about a doctor and their finances, not, of course, mentioning their name or even that they were a specialist. And someone came up to me and said, you must be talking about Dr. So-and-so. So whenever I'm talking about somebody now who's in California, they're practicing in Iceland. So there you go. So no city.
This practice is in Hawaii. No,
definitely
not in California.
Right. Exactly.
It's not a super strange story. It's just made me chuckle. So female dentists, female staff, work very hard, good at what they do, major remodel to their office. And she said, I want a wet bar in my private office. And I said, really? And she said, yep, I want a bar. I want a sink. I want places for, you know, glassware. I don't need a dishwasher, but I want a refrigerator, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, okay. Of course.
You can do that.
And so a little later, I was newer at this, right? It was a long time ago. And so I finally said, you know, just out of curiosity, what do you like host other dentists in here? He goes, oh, no. We work really hard. We do happy hour at the end of the day on like Thursdays and Fridays.
Nice.
And my staff stays over and we have a couple drinks and sometimes we go out and get dinner. And I was like, well, okay, that makes sense then. So that was a cool one. And then another story that is kind of makes you chuckle is this goes back, and I didn't design this office, but I actually was a pair of dentists that were both the 50-50 owners. They each had their private office, and in between, they had a hot tub that they shared. There were like glass walls and they could open a door. It was almost like an atrium, but it was inside and they had a hot tub. And this goes back, I think it was built in the early 70s. And so story goes that the staff used to go in there with them. Now, don't know the HR rules around that.
Psychedelic lights, a little John Travolta we're talking here.
I don't think there was a disco ball or lights or anything, but they actually ended up separating. And so there was a little bit of a fight over who was going to get to stay and keep the hot tub.
Who gets the hot tub?
Who was going to have to leave. And so, because they wanted, they liked it.
We did the same problem in our accounting office. No, I'm just kidding. We never did that. Let's put a bow on this. Biggest mistakes you see dentists making in designing offices.
I say, honestly, probably the most headaches that doctors have is when they don't work with somebody who knows dental.
Yeah. Yep. That's the right answer.
You mentioned earlier, and the design part of it is important for sure. I'd say the construction part of it, having someone with dental experience, is maybe more important, honestly, because if you have a contractor that doesn't have dental experience, there are nuances in dental that they get and they understand, and they will question, just like the story I mentioned when the, you know, is the track light backing there or whatever. They know that, hey, wait, this guy wants track lights and the plans are off. They're going to call me and say, hey, Joe, did you, you know, they're getting track lights and you have ceiling mounted lights on there. Oh, did they make a change or did I make a mistake? Okay, let's figure that out. So, you know, communication and having someone that knows what they're doing. Whereas the non-dental contractor will just do what's on the plans. They may or may not call for a clarification. They're just going to say, well, it's on the plans, I did it. And you know what? If I undo it, I'm going to charge you for it. So I'd rather have the person that's going to question it before they do it and not charge you for it. And that goes again with myself, but also very important is the contractor. Those are probably the biggest mistakes that I see is when they don't work with dental professionals. Same thing with financing, same thing with realtors. Everybody who I work with on a normal basis that's in the industry, the projects tend to go smoother and quicker, and there's less headache than when you've got people that really aren't in the know.
And that's important, guys. The dental financing companies, they have people who specialize in working with, you know, buying a practice. That's one completely separate thing that Joe and Mike and Lauren don't get involved in. But when you're talking about a build out, you're talking about a startup, you're talking about a second location, you're talking about an expansion, they know, you know, they know what it costs. And if a doctor says, I want to build a 3,000 square foot office with 8 operatories for $300,000, the banker's going to say, you're dreaming.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, so it's important to work with dental specialists. Thank you so much. Stay with me as I take this out and one more time, give out your contact information. Guys, if you have any questions, you're thinking about, you know, moving, building a new office, buying a building, building a building from the ground up, expanding your office, doing a second office, doing a third office, you know, give Joe a call. Listen to the podcast with Joe and then the next one after this one with Mike. You're going to get so, this has been so informative, what you and your brother were able to give to our listeners. I'm really, really happy I did this. Give me your contact information,
thank
please,
you.
For my listeners.
And can I just add one more quick,
Yes, of course.
Mistake. One of the biggest mistakes also that I do see is people don't start soon enough. So the dentist, I've had people come to me, they say, my lease is up in 12 months and I need to be out of here. And I say, oh boy, do you have a space? Well, I'm looking at spaces. So you haven't signed on with anything. So do me a favor, do yourself a favor and don't wait too long to get started.
Yep.
I would say start the process 2 years before your lease is up.
18 months to 2 years.
I've absolutely looked for a year and a half for a space before. But let's say you take 6 months to find a space. And then you're negotiating, and then we get started. You do the math. By the time you get permits and go through all the jurisdictional stuff and have the built, you're moving in just a month or two before your deadline.
In so, conversations with your brother, there's some cities are better than others. We could spend another 2 hours on this.
Yeah, I know.
Joe Panisi, thank you so much. Please stay with me as I take the podcast out.
PepCreative.com.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yep. I'm getting ahead of myself.
I got sidetracked. www.pepcreative.net, 925-339-1101, joe@pepcreative.net.
Beautiful.
And thanks for having me.
All right. Just stay with me while I take this out. And folks, again, thank you for the honor and the privilege of your time. I love doing this. I've loved doing this now for, we're coming up on 7 years. I can't believe it. Time flies when you're having fun. We've covered every management and finance topic. And folks, I'm not done yet. We got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Again, thanks to my partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 continuing education courses at a wonderful, wonderful, very inexpensive price and great clinical content. Make sure to attend our webinar, live webinar, Thursday, September 4th from 6 till 8 p.m. on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act signed by President Trump and all the tax ramifications that dentists are going to be dealing with. A lot of them are good, so I think you're going to be very happy, especially 100% bonus depreciation. which again, guys, you want to make sure you take advantage, talk to your CPAs. And again, if you're not happy with your CPA doesn't understand dentistry, they don't understand construction process and how to work with an architect, and they don't know all the professionals to work with, and they don't know what percentage of your production should be in the 4,000 codes, please give us a call at Ide Bailey. We live and breathe this every single day. 657-279-3243. Wiederman, A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at IdeBailey.com. Please either call me or email me, and please tell your friends about the podcast. We have thousands of people that listen to this podcast every month, and I talked to one this morning, and I'm helping him to buy into a practice, and he says, oh, I know you. I said, well, I don't think we remember. No, I listen to your podcast every week. So we have lots of people and stuff. Joe, thank you so much for your help, and really appreciate what you do for the dental community, you and your brother and your wife. And again, folks, this will be coming out. First will be Joe's podcast on August 27th, and then Mike's podcast recording will come out on the 10th. And with that, again, want to thank everybody for listening. That is it for this edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman at idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at EIDEBAILLY.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.